Hello and welcome to the China Business Brief, a podcast from the China Britain Business Council, where we explain the latest news relevant to anyone working in or with the world's second largest economy. I'm Joe Cash, and this week I'm delighted to be joined by one of CBBC's vice chairs, Duncan Clark, to test a hypothesis that has been doing the rounds amongst China watchers recently. That is, increased government interference in China's markets has made the country uninvestable to Western investors. Duncan is a China expert who advises Western investors on the country's economy and is the author of Alibaba, The House Which Jack Ma Built. So we're in great hands as we try to pick apart this question. Duncan, welcome to the show. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
So it's been a bit of a roller coaster year in terms of the Chinese economy, its markets. And if we cast our minds back to April, I suppose, the China's State Administration for Market Regulation, or the FAMR, decided to whack Alibaba with a record-breaking £2 billion fine for monopolistic behaviour as the start of all of this regulatory turmoil, which is then carried over into the education, and if headlines are to be believed from this week, financial services sectors, with them all coming under greater government scrutiny. How have companies reacted and started to behave now that they know they're far more under the watch of the state, particularly in the tech sector, where rumours are that the crackdown is beginning to ease after a year of nervousness for companies in that space?
Yeah, I mean, you date the beginning to April, I guess, 2021, right? If memory serves, for the SMAR intervention. But I would probably take it back a bit earlier. In that, probably the crackdown, if you will, on Alibaba, or rather Ant, back in late October 2020, based on Jack Ma's infamous speech. Not to say that it was obvious then what was going to happen, but it certainly for Alibaba there was a major wake up call that there was a sort of not a new sheriff in town, but a certainly more powerful sheriff in town. And that only accelerated. That was sort of, in a sense, the early warning system for the whole, fintech, and then let's say tech, and then the whole private sector. So I think I would say, we've been, 2.5 years now almost of this. And the fines to some extent were, expected ahead of time, and there was a lot of channeling of information about what might be coming. I think the shock of the intervention against Ant, literally stopping their IPO, marked a new phase that the government is prepared to do the unexpected and to do things that previously were considered to be beyond their willingness to, potentially damage the economy or damage investor confidence. So the whole point is that moving against Ant and then tech and then the private sector in general is clearly now a new frontier of regulatory control, which, after 20, 30 years of more laissez-faire, engaging with the private sector is a big departure.
And obviously, you've been advising investors trying to come into the China market for years. And there's always been this notion that, of course, the government could intervene at any moment and behaves, dare I say, as a sort of Damocles. But do you feel that this tech crackdown, when it happened, the conversations that you were having with investors changed at the same point, or has it not crossed the threshold whereby investors are put off? Because if they've always known that government intervention is on the cards, have they largely remained bullish and considered, well, this is, par for the course of investing in China?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm going up on 28 years or so in the country. When I first came here in the mid-90s, the real risk takers back then actually were the overseas Chinese, actually, who were doing, starting really from the 80s and so on, putting money into, Fujian, Guangdong, initially for manufacturing, and then later on for the domestic market. There were also Chinese private sector entrepreneurs, particularly in Zhejiang, taking risks early on, but on a very small scale. So early on, it was like locals and overseas Chinese who were taking crazy risks. Multinationals, of course, which became the big run up to WTO and beyond, they started, getting more heavily invested in China, could never take the same amount of risks as some of the local entrepreneurs, the overseas Chinese. In fact, there was a sort of a partnership between multinationals often and the overseas Chinese, from Singapore, Hong Kong, Taiwan, etc., who would actually play a role. Anyway, so that's all changed because increasingly Chinese private sector entrepreneurs became more cashed up, partly through the internet. I mean, the rise of Alibaba, Tencent, and others showed how big the private sector could be, national brand. Previously, private sector was often pretty local, and so new investors came in to back private Chinese entrepreneurs, whereas previously, Western investment might be like, I might invest indirectly through, let's say back in the day, a Motorola that's doing well in China or something. So it was, increasingly investors got confident that they could back Chinese entrepreneurs in China. That's a big departure from, say, 10, 15 years ago. And the internet was a big part of that. So, the investor base in China from foreigner, sorry, the foreign investor base in China has grown massively from those early days, but also it's diversified. There are people who have a higher appetite for risk. Some actually invest because of the risk. They're looking at, hedge funds and others looking at the volatility sometimes as a positive thing. But I would say that the taking on initial with the cancellation of the anti-IPO and then the taking on of other what were considered almost, the geese laying the golden eggs, companies like Alibaba and Tencent, who were driving private sector consumption, driving innovation, taking on that class of companies, I think did begin to give some investors pause, and the randomness and of the intervention, even on very large companies, started to make it very difficult for some investors to justify. Also, we've seen delistings of companies from the US, right? Where previously, a US listed Chinese stock was considered, well, it's gone through a certain degree of, disclosure, and obviously with delistings, we just saw Didi, I think, delist last week, for example, after a pretty awful, short 1 year experience in the public markets. That really has damaged investor confidence for many, but it's not for everyone. I mean, there are still investors who are looking, frankly, to, buy on the dip right now, take on levels of risk that they are comfortable with. So this idea that you mentioned at the beginning of uninvestable China, I really don't buy into that. I mean, I think uninvestable, maybe Pyongyang stock market would be an example, but I don't think that's applying to Shanghai, Shenzhen, and Hong Kong.
And there were loads of points that I'd like to take further from your answer there, because it's interesting. You mentioned that, of course, one of the reasons people became so interested in China originally was its capacity for innovation and these entrepreneurs, who were leading their companies in a certain way, relatively independent of the state. And we can touch on that later. And also the fact that China does have, well, it used to have rather, an IPO market on which these companies could list. Oh, and also it's very interesting to see, where has this headline that has been doing the rounds that China has become uninvestable, where has that come from? So I suppose taking those points in the reverse order, obviously to many business people who are still in China, because more and more have left, that headline has been met with a lot of surprise. Where do you think this notion that China has become uninvestable has come from? And do you think it's a vicious circle that if we keep repeating it more and more in commentary, it's more likely to become true?
Well, I think isn't the author of that comment, I mean, wasn't the author of that comment JP Morgan, an analyst, I think, who has since kind of retracted it, or the bank has kind of said this is no longer the case. Was it JP Morgan? I think it
I
was.
think I've seen all of the banks at some point in the last year have a
I
go at.
think, yeah, I mean, I think it was the zeitgeist of frustration, what, 3, 4 months back about uninvestable, that it was certainly unpredictable, and a level of unpredictability that they were just uncomfortable with. And there, I mean, there were very many reasons. On top of the crackdown on the private sector, there's been all of the costs of zero COVID, which is also, a very random policy in terms of, or random development of the pandemic, meaning massive swings in, look at what's happened to Shanghai earlier, to Jilin, or even briefly Shenzhen, and now Beijing. You just don't know where it's coming from. So that sense of there's an underlying nervousness about the randomness of, of the pandemic and the treatment of the pandemic. But, already on top of that, though, we have this, uncertain attitude towards the private sector, whether they're trying to work with it, trying to restrain it, trying to punish it. So, you add that together, and it's just difficult to calculate risk, etc. And one thing we can say for sure is that the cost of capital in China is going up. There's a risk, premium to Chinese capitals raising money now that is much higher than, say, 4 or 5 years ago because of this, unpredictability. I mean, risk is part of investment. There's no zero risk investments, but unpredictable risk, with massive swings, it's making China more akin to sort of Bitcoin than sort of US treasuries or something. So I think that it's just the level of risk became too great for many investors who had sort of assumed there had always been the safe assumption that the government, and the party, obviously, its power is based on the ability to deliver, economic prosperity, stability, etc. And so when measures were taken that seemed to be inimical to that, that started to, give investors pause.
And, going back to that point you mentioned earlier about the fact that there's a new sheriff in town and that the party has, made its presence felt, more clearly amongst the private sector. Turning our attention away from whether investors consider there to be a suitable level of risk for them to invest in the market, is the party becoming more involved in private sector and the tech sector in particular? A systemic issue in the long term, in so much as that these industries will struggle to remain as innovative and as attractive as a result to investors long term.
Well, it's interesting. I think what the government, of course, wants innovation. Every government wants innovation. I mean, every government can figure out that if they want growth, they need to unlock new drivers, improve their nation's competitiveness versus others. But I think this government, or the current makeup of this government, is much more focused on more of a sort of hardware approach than a software approach, let's say. So the hardware of electric vehicles, for example, or new power technologies. Robotics appeals to this more, let's say, traditional mindset, I think, of a international competition, that China's increasingly talking about dual circulation and reducing its dependencies on the West, particularly in areas like semiconductors, right, which is the Achilles heel, if you will. So they're much more focused, this government, on long-term planning in more industrial engineering-driven technologies than a cool fintech application or gaming, let's say, which, but the irony, of course, is that those more what they consider surface level technologies and innovation have driven massive amounts of value, right? The growth of Tencent, Alibaba, and many other companies really drove up not only the stock prices for those companies, but huge employment of university graduates, bringing China into the lead in some fields, like in gaming, for example. I mean, Tencent is a leading global player. And yet that just wasn't seen from the party, at least that, the dominant side of the party, to be what they really want from innovation. They're thinking more things, I think, than ways of doing things. And also their key focus is reducing dependency, right, on the West. And so it's a very different approach to innovation. And it's going to be more state-led, innovation, which, China has been pursuing all along the time I've been here. They've done it in things like 3G technology, TDS, CDMA, which never got anywhere. But, there's always been an attempt by state companies to create standards, own standards, develop China's own technologies to compete on the global sphere. They just haven't been very successful. But it doesn't mean they've given up. And now, there are, if you look at a lot of local venture capital funds that have been raised, often by local governments, it's pouring money into these champion technologies, even if the track record of innovation is very poor, and there's been actually a lot of fraud, a lot of failure, that hasn't dissuaded people. In fact, the kind of people who want to raise money for this stuff are not able to raise it, frankly, in the international capital markets, or through venture capital. But they feel emboldened by this crackdown on the private sector. But the reality is we've had a lot of venture capital raised to pursue these national champions or these like mini champions that people have been talking about, as opposed to the big players like Ali, Tencent. There'll be dozens or hundreds of these smaller champions, but with a state sort of anointed plan, I'm very skeptical whether any of that's going to pay off. But the government is determined to pursue it.
Right, because there have been some murmurings amongst analysts that perhaps a tech crackdown is coming to an end with the state realizing that it can't be the everything and both be a government and also a kind of overseer of kind of decentralized innovation. And I mean, I suppose, does you know, what do investors need to see in terms of, you know, if this tech crackdown is to be brought to an end? You know, are we talking, you know, Ant Group or Didi, for example, being given licenses again to list? Or, you know, what signs do you think investors are waiting to see to kind of turn this narrative back and for China to be more, you know, easily investable?
Yeah, I mean, I think they have a bit of a, what I call a Humpty Dumpty challenge right now. You know, all the king's horses and all the king's men can't put Humpty together again. And, you know, he was sitting on a wall with a great fall. Anyway, but this idea of Humpty Dumpty, like, how do you put this ecosystem back together again? Because it has been damaged, right? I mean, there, you know, you mentioned the education and training sector. Okay, you know, ideologically wasn't sort of very consistent with the way that they wanted things to go. But I mean, it employed a lot of people, generated, you know, a lot of local level employment actually, and, you know, which has been destroyed, and market cap on top. So it's hard, you know, to sustain the animal spirits, if you will, of entrepreneurs if you're putting them on a gluten-free diet, you know. And so that's, I think, where, you know, we all need animal spirits, right? The level of risk, the level of ambition that China was known for, you know, to take on and in some cases beat, you know, global players. We saw that in the internet players. You know, some would say it's due to protectionism, but it's not all due to that. I mean, you and I use Tencent, you know, WeChat willingly compared to other platforms because it's better in many ways, right? Or we, you know, the online shopping experience we have here is better than many ways in the West. It's not all due to protectionism, but a lot of it's down to, you know, again, the animal spirits of entrepreneurs, this intense white heat of competition. And yet, you know, the last few years have been very damaging to confidence for entrepreneurs as well as investors. And I would say that's probably more important, actually, that, you know, unless you have entrepreneurs who are emboldened to take risks and also think that they can benefit from the, you know, the fruits of their labor, then, you know, investment is kind of immaterial. I mean, you know, the investors will follow visionary entrepreneurs. But if the entrepreneurs themselves are questioning the whole environment, then we have to question what's going to happen. I mean, you know, will new companies emerge that, you know, in the same vein that we've seen the last decade or two? And, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs today, you talk to them in China, are focusing either on international opportunities, for example, Southeast Asia, even the Middle East, Europe, or some of them lying flat. You know, this idea that they just don't want to have a high profile. We've seen many founders of companies relinquish their titles, certainly in some cases their shares, to just get out of the sights, you know, of any government you know, crackdowns or targeting for them or their sector that they're in. So that's, you know, so I think the government has probably realized that they need to kind of reassure investors. And they have been trying that for the last year, reassuring entrepreneurs as well. But it's still a sense of it's a very febrile atmosphere. And I think we should also mention the property crackdown that has, you know, that's right there, a third of the economy. Maybe tech is, I don't know, 15-20%. But it's an outsized importance in terms of, you know, the future of this country. And that has been particularly damaging.
Well, it's always great to leave a podcast on a cliffhanger, because it's certainly going to be something worth watching over the next, I think, for 3 to 5 years, really. I don't think we're going to see any immediate fix, as you, you know, just described. It's a deep issue that is going to take a lot of, well, eggshell is hard to put together at the best of times, so if we're carrying on the Humpty Dumpty metaphor. But Duncan, thanks for coming on the podcast. This has been great and super informative.
Thank you, Joe. Thanks for having me.
And thanks for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time with another episode of China Business Brief. Goodbye. China Business Brief is a podcast brought to you by the China Britain Business Council. If you enjoyed this podcast, make sure you're subscribed. To find out more about our other events and activities, do check out our website at www.cbbc.org.